Welcome to the Mando Cantina. This is the show where we talk about the Mandalorian.
This is the way.
We have spoken. So today we're talking about, chapters 6 and 7 of the Mandalorian, because we hadn't had a chance to talk 6, and 7 came out today.
That's right.
And we did get a chance to watch it.
They were in quick succession, Mike, as we talked about, because of this Rise of Skywalker release schedule. They pushed Mandalorian several days early this week, which is very nice. So, but it's funny because it means we have to wait longer till the next Mandalorian.
It's true. But I mean, we do have Rise of Skywalker to hold us over, so I think we'll survive.
That's absolutely right.
So we were coming off of Chapter 5, which I thought was very bad because it was very bad. And I didn't have a whole lot of hope. I was really starting to get like shaken on the series. I was like, man, it started strong, but this thing is starting to lose me. Uh-huh. In chapter 6, The Prisoner did not do just a whole lot to get me back, but it was better than chapter 5.
Oh, dramatically better than chapter 5. And you know, new Star Wars stuff in the sense of new, maybe a story we've seen before in Star Wars, but a new way to tell a story and a different flavor of Star Wars. So let's just get right into the episode, I guess, Mike. Well, this is another one of those, I hate to say filler episodes, but filler episodes where the Mando does a job.
It did feel like filler, yeah. This one directed by Rick Famuyiwa.
That's right.
The horror elements were strong here, and I knew you'd latch onto that. My wife had a good description of the episode. She said that it felt like a Doctor Who episode, which she's a lot bigger Doctor Who fan than I am.
That's
I have seen, like, oh yeah, you're kind of right. Just kind of a self-contained, random scary story in space kind of thing that is sometimes overly cheesy because we met some side characters in this episode. And I guess I'm giving away my opinion about them. But we met some of the Mando's old crew, and they were animated. Yeah,
that's true. Several of them were very animated. So I guess let's get into it, Mike. So the Mando takes another job at the start of this. He goes to a space station, looks like a small docking base. And the name of this episode is called The Prisoner, by the way. And, you know, the main narrative has not been pushed very much, episodes 5 and 6, which was a complaint we had. I liked the way the narrative took a break in episode 4 because it kind of became a character episode. But then when episode 5 and 6 kicked in, we kind of wanted more of the story with the child and the Empire and the Mandalorian. We didn't really get that. We got 2 episodes of him doing bounty hunting RPG things, and that's fine. They're fun. But I don't know. That's kind of where I feel at the start of this. So this is kind of like you said, kind of a Doctor Who X-Files type sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where we have a self-contained story or antagonist type situation, and it's dealt with by the end. So how does the episode start, Mike, other than just him landing on this place, but he gets a job?
I honestly don't remember. I've seen it twice, but I don't care to revisit the plot beat by beat. He meets up with his old crew. They go to break somebody out of a New Republic prison ship. I will say that was interesting.
That was very interesting. We get new characters. We get Ronzer, who's Mark Boone Jr. Of course, he's been in a lot of things. But then, of course, we have Bill Burr playing Mayfield, and the Devivorian bruiser called Berg, played by Clancy Brown, who's so funny because he was in Clone Wars. He's also in Rebels. He's Ezra's neighbor, right? Rebels that helped Ezra's parents. Really strange to see him back in Star Wars because his voice is so prominent. And, of course, we had Mando's old fling, a Twi'lek woman named Zian, I think. Played by Natalia Tenya from Game of Thrones. And most importantly,
Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's right. And most importantly of all, Mike, we had a new droid that was very Forlom-esque called Zero, played by Richard Ayoade, who is a prominent British comedian actor, one of my wife's favorites because she is a huge IT Crowd fan. And he is Moss in the IT Crowd. And with him speaking one word, I said, Katie, it's your guy. I turned to her and because he was just pure Richard. So this is a new crew. It's mainly a way of showing more Star Wars aliens and characters. And, you know, Bill Burr seemed like he was having fun playing the jerk guy.
They all seemed like they were having fun, and somebody should have reined that in because
they all had too much fun.
Because Zero was the only one that was believable.
Yeah.
I'll say Bill Burr got at least halfway there.
I like Bill Burr.
A lot of people had problems with the space Boston accent. I didn't. I mean, there's weird accents all over Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
If we can have Werner Herzog's accent in Star Wars, we can deal with a Boston accent.
And all that beautiful vocabulary Werner Herzog has, too. Man, that's good stuff.
I mean, I appreciated it like that. I wasn't a stormtrooper wise ass and stuff like that.
I can shoot stuff. He's a sharpshooter. He was an ex-Imperial sharpshooter. Mando did not like that. But those are funny little beginnings. So Mando's already getting, he's kind of held hostage by this job because they say, we have to use your ship. And this crew is not very nice to him. They really aren't. And they find the child, and that makes the audience of the show uneasy because everybody loves the child, dubbed Yoda Baby, not Baby Yoda, Yoda Baby, because this is not a baby of Yoda. This is a Yoda species.
I mean, we don't know that.
It's true. It's true. Very true. So, of course, then we get we board the ship and we have some crazy droid flying that Zero does, which was another interesting part of this. Mike, we had the New Republic ship. We had Zero's humanly impossible flying, I guess, that a human can't do, those type of turns and stuff, to dock with the New Republic prisoner ship.
Yeah, I'm still not done complaining about these characters, though, because the Twi'leks and the Devronian looked like shit.
They don't transfer well to 4K?
They don't they looked like we have a TV budget and we're not spending the right amount of money on this. I felt like I could see like lines in the makeup. Natalia was overacting everything and it was just gross.
Yeah, she was like the over-the-top rogue in your D&D campaign. That's what the vibe I got from her.
And her brother, when they break him out of the cell, he looked terrible too. I don't know. Pretty disappointed in the design of this episode. Like, this looks like it was made for TV, and you set us up to expect better.
I mean, they looked like Twi'leks and Devivorians to me. But maybe you're saying that the makeup should have improved since the original trilogy time, or just, I mean, Bib Fortuna certainly looks better. That's for sure.
I feel like Ula looks better.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's something we can look at in the future. So.
Okay. Not even in that way. Just like the makeup.
No, I know what Ula you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I'm not sure. Yeah. 4K makes these kind of things more pronounced, of course. So
I didn't even see it in 4K the first time, though, and I felt like it was pretty bad.
Of course, they double-cross the Mando in the story, right? I mean, they're going to get a prisoner out, but then when they get the prisoner out, which was Zian's brother, then they all double-cross the Mando. And we kind of – Mando almost foresaw this coming, because when he locks the child in the room, which sounds really terrible, when he goes in the ship, he looks at the door for a long pause, like, should I leave the kid here?
Mando is not a good parent. Not his fault, but he is not the most responsible single dad.
He's trying. He's trying.
He's trying, but there's a lot of room for improvement. You know, he should have just paid whatever it took to get Princess Carolyn, whatever her name in the show was, to leave town and come with him and just be like the nanny.
So what'd you think about this New Republic ship and the security droids, Mike, that had the IG-type arms and bodies, but different heads, more of the HK looking heads and stuff. What do you think?
I got more of the same, man. They looked like they were cheap and made for TV.
Yeah.
The CGI action
wasn't as good.
The action itself was cool.
Good. Yeah, it was,
but
it was contained.
These don't look like Star Wars droids. They usually do a good job of making Star Wars droids look tangible. And especially
when IG-11 and Zero.
And we were seeing Zero in the same episode who looked really good.
I literally cannot tell if Zero was practical CGI or some combination of both. I cannot tell.
I'm willing to bet Zero was practical at least 90% of the time, which is impressive.
Yeah. Maybe they went sort of the Phoebe Waller-Bridge route where she was wearing the full suit.
Yeah.
And they filled in the gaps with CGI. Instead of the Anthony Daniels really tight wires in there, they actually just CGI'd the wires and stuff in. Doubt it was Richard Ayoade, but maybe it was, some Doug Jones type thin actor in there.
It's all right. Pedro Pascal has only been in the show half the time anyway.
He's there in spirit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we should talk about the assassination of Matt Lanter, though.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask what you thought about that. My first thought was, man, it's really cool to see New Republic Fleet Troopers. This is cool. I didn't even realize it was Matt Lanter for quite a while. And then I was like, oh my gosh, that's Matt Lanter. Matt Lanter, of course, plays Anakin Skywalker on Clone Wars and has done more voice work for Anakin now than Hayden ever did his entire life. So he is the guy who's played Anakin more than anybody else. And yeah, he was the New Republic Fleet Trooper that was manning the entire ship by himself. Whole new uniforms.
We got
He wasn't supposed to be there. Whole new uniforms. We got to see the New Republic logo in all of its glory. We've seen glimpses of in the show a little bit before this, but this is truly it. And yeah, those new Fleet Trooper costumes and stuff. I was a fan. I liked all that. That was cool. A little bit of lore.
Yeah. So once the Mandalorian breaks out of the jail cell, we definitely flip the switch to horror mode as he picks them off one by one.
Predator,
That was cool. It was executed very well. They each kind of got their own different way of being taken out by the Mando. Yeah, nobody expected really cool. The Deveronians to be flameproof.
Yeah.
But that was neat. Definitely thought he straight murdered the Deveronian though, with the blast doors. I was like, oh, that's a nasty splatter there.
Yeah. Well, it's because we saw that in the first episode, right? We were primed from that with the Quarren. They got cut in half. So now the irony of this, Mike, is you're right. We have this sort of horror sequences. We have these aliens predator sequences where we have the lights flashing in and out and the Mando is getting closer. He's disappearing from sight and they can't catch him. He's very good in stealth. And
the Bill Burr strobe one was pretty good.
I liked that one a lot. That was really fun the second time to rewatch. But what's fun about this, Mike, is by the end of the episode, he actually just locks them all in a cell. He doesn't kill any of them.
Well, I mean, he tells the brother they got what they deserve. So we're led to think, oh, he killed him.
That's right.
And then we see later, oh, he does have his moral code. He just threw them all in the same cell.
But that moral code does not apply to droids because Zero tries to kill the child and Zero's a droid. Zero dies, and the baby, we have a comedic moment with the baby looking at his hand like, did I do that?
Oh, yeah, I did appreciate the baby. He was like, I'm going to use the force to influence this guy who stopped him, and then he explodes. That was cool.
That was cool. And that's kind of – so then the episode ends with Mando taking the prisoner back to the base, back to Boone Jr., like we talked about earlier, the actor, and he leaves, and they say, kill him. Send the gunships to kill him. And then they realize that Mando left the Republic transmitter in their pocket.
Which, can we talk about that for a second?
Okay.
Like, I'm fine with the tracker and everything, but they just immediately knew, okay, that's activated. They're going to come here and destroy this ship. Why is it automatically X-Wings are going to come blow up this prisoner ship?
I don't know if it was necessarily they're going to come blow up the prisoner ship. I think they were going to kill the people boarding, right? If a ship was...
And you know, come investigate whatever. It seemed to me like, oh, beacon's activated. We got to go blow that thing up with X-Wings, even though it's got prisoners that should have rights and stuff on it. Seems a little... maybe some early hints of New Republic still not being squeaky clean, maybe being a little war crimey.
I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think it's more of a defense mechanism to, you know, boarding pirates, kill the pirate ship.
They didn't wait a whole long time to start shooting when they got to the space station.
Well, I loved that part because it was just one of those good sort of fun.
I like 2/3 of it.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Swashbuckling moment where we have the gunfighter getaway last second, right? And then we have them realizing that he put it in their pocket. And then, of course, we have, once again, Mike, since Rogue One, the first time we've seen T-65s in a modern format again, which is nice. And we have three X-Wings blow up the gunship and blow up the base. And Mando just sneaks out. And three of those pilots are prominent people.
Which
is really cool, actually.
Famuyiwa, the director of the episode, Deborah Chow, who has actually proven to be the best director so far.
Yep.
And in The Mandalorian. And then my arch nemesis. God, he's the terrible. He didn't even try to act. He was just like, I'm going to say things in my Dave Filoni voice. And my name's Trapper Wolf. Get a life, man.
you don't have to act when you're saying the target's dead ahead, Mike. That's our, you know.
Looks like some kind of gunship there.
Oh my god. I think you've gotten too far with your hatred of Dave. It's just tainted everything.
You know, if I had gotten away from it, not knowing that he named his character Trapper Wolf, I might have let some of it go.
I didn't know that, but I thought it was pretty cool seeing Dave in that form, because I said, oh, okay, this is a good Dave cameo. Just a one-line X-Wing pilot, you know. He's always going to be wearing a hat.
I will confront you one day, Filoni. I wasn't able to do it at the Rise of Skywalker world premiere. I'll get you at next celebration.
Oh my goodness. Give him a hug, Mike. That's what
did you watch Scrubs?
That's what you both need. Yeah, of course I watched Scrubs.
Yeah. So you know how Dr. Cox had his beef with Hugh Jackman?
Right.
I've got mine with Dave Filoni.
Oh goodness. Yeah. I know. Listeners of the show will that's no surprise to them. But yeah, it was cool to see the X-Wings blow it up and Mando just escape. And we have a final moment between Mando and the child, him giving him the ball again. And
told you that was a bad idea.
Then the episode
that was nice.
Ends. Yeah, told you that was a bad idea. So this was a fun episode. It was not amazing. It was not in the top tier of the show, but it was definitely better than the previous episode by a long shot. And
yes,
it was fun because it had the aliens, close quarters, predator type elements at the end. And of course it had the RPG element at the beginning where we literally had a tank, a rogue, a ranged DPS, and then like a leader ranged DPS, like all working together. And you know, we finally got to see Bill Burr's little funky predator gun. And it's weird that we had the predator gun the same episode with the predator elements with the red lights flashing in and out.
Just one last critique beyond like the makeup. The CGI of the X-Wings didn't look good either.
You don't think
it looked like it was made on a TV budget.
Huh.
Like the scenes where they're like firing on the space station and everything don't look near as good as the Razor's Crest does.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of real stuff, practical effects, in theory at least. So.
Right. But I mean, even done. Come close to looking like any of the movies. Boiling it down to the simplest part, like it was made on a TV show budget, which is fine, but we were led to believe that that was not going to be the case.
Well, that's true, but it's obviously apparent now, Mike, that certain episodes of this show have dramatically bigger budgets than other episodes of the show.
That is fair.
And I'm going to say that before we go into episode 7, which is definitely a bigger budget, just like episode 3 and even 1 and 2 were bigger budgets. It seems like...
I mean, 4 was a big budget too.
It was big budget, but in a different way. There's a lot of extras in that and stuff. It's not...
Well, extras and effects and outside set and all that stuff.
Yeah. So let's just go ahead and... And just any final thoughts on 6 before we move into 7? Just our little
horror. Nope, 7 ruled. Let's talk about 7.
7 was amazing. 7 was like a weird part 2 in-game to Infinity War of episode 3. It almost felt jolting, Mike, because it almost felt like you could potentially, even I don't want to because of the story we got, it felt potentially you could cut out 4, 5, and 6. And go straight from 3 to 7.
No, that's exactly right. 7 is what we all thought we were going to get early on, assembling a team, basically.
Yeah. And you and I had a lot of theories on that, and we were like, oh, we're completely wrong. And then it's like, oh, I guess we're right again.
Delayed in assembling the team, which I'm fine with.
It's different.
They convinced me it wasn't going to happen.
Absolutely.
And they did it. And I was happy. Loved getting Cara Dune back.
They convinced me IG-11 was permanently dead. And he's not permanently dead.
As soon as he came through like the door or whatever, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Jesse loves this one.
he wasn't even my favorite part. It was interesting to see the way they took him. He's clearly different. But so let's talk about this episode. This episode starts out in a strange way, Mike. It ties almost right back to 3, like I said. Ironically, these are both Deborah Chow episodes, and it makes sense now with their filming schedule. They probably filmed these back to back, right? They filmed these back to back on these sets on the Bounty Hunter.
So happy she has all of Obi-Wan.
Me too. You know, I'm excited about that more than anything. So basically, this starts off with Carl Weathers extending an olive branch to the Mandalorian and telling him things have gotten really bad. The Imperials have dug in because of the situation with the child and the clients, and he needs Mando to come back, and they need to meet some sort of middle ground. And this kind of starts the next tier of this story, Mike, where the Mando goes and gets the team, right?
Yep. He's like, okay, well, I need to go back and do this so that they stop sending people after the kid, but I can't do it alone. So he goes and convinces Cara Dune, who's in a
MMA fight,
a fight club kind of situation. But I did appreciate the twist of the, electricity belts kind of
keeping everybody
binding them together. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
At first I was like, wait a minute, what happened to that village since they left? I was like, oh, right. This isn't that peaceful village that they helped out. This was like the main city where there were some scummy people.
And then we return to fake Tatooine. I forget the name of the planet to speak with Queel.
I love it. Queel. We actually get Queel's name said aloud.
And it's not Queel like we all thought.
Yeah, it's Queel. And we get more of his backstory of being an Ugnaught for the Empire. And he had three lifetimes of human lifetimes of servitude before he got himself free with his own hands. I really liked all his backstory. It was really good character building. And then, of course,
I did too.
We get an interesting, random, out of nowhere montage of him finding IG-11's body and taking him back and retraining him, reprogramming him basically from square one to be his new butler protector. No longer a hunter droid, just
it's very interesting. Instead of programming him, you know, zeros and ones from the ground up, he's like, okay, cool, we'll just turn on this AI and machine learning and just teach this thing how to walk and like serve tea and stuff like
that. I love it. Move cargo crates and help feed the blurgs, except he can't get the food in the blurgs troughs for quite some time. It was a fun little montage. And, you know, we even see more of the Blurgs, Mike. I know you're not a big fan of them, but clearly Queel has a really close relationship with them. And I like that.
And, you know, we saw the Dubak in 5, which, again, 5, but I was like, oh, that Dubak looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Those Blurgs look like they belong in Doctor Who.
Oh, my gosh. From time to time, the Dubak didn't look as good as I was hoping he would, even though I still was obsessed because the animations and everything, I just obsessed with the Dubak.
Yeah, but I mean, you have a Dubak tramp stamp.
Yeah.
Oh, have we said that on the show before?
I don't think so.
It's canon now. Get that
out to the world. Let's not get into that. So, yeah. Not yet, Mike. No Dubak or Tauntaun tattoos, but maybe one day. So we will see. But, you know, we basically have the Mando tell him, I need someone to watch the kid. I need someone to go with me. There's a situation. And Queel says, all right, fine. As long as I can bring the droid and the Blurks. And Mando's like, what?
Yeah. I mean, we all know Mando's history with droids. And I like how it kept up. Like, no, I killed that one, that specific one for a reason.
It tried to kill the child.
I don't like droids to begin with.
Tried to kill the child. And then we just had Zero try to kill the child in the last episode.
Yeah. Well, then I started trying to be like, how big is the Razor's Crest? And what's the square footage like in here? Yeah. And I guess they all fit.
Yeah, the Blurgs are in there really tight. Three of them. They're in there real tight, but they're in there. And so then we, of course, so now we have Kara, and we have Queel, and we go back to the bounty hunter planet now.
So we have skipped over a little bit of cool stuff with Cara Dune.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So about how more story.
She's like, well, I don't want to be found by the New Republic either, because I fought on the good side. I haven't always done good things since then, and we learned about her. What they call them, droppers, like her shock trooper tattoo.
Yeah.
I want a Cara Dune comic miniseries or novel.
Please.
This idea of rebel shock trooper badasses is just super intriguing to me.
Yeah, they're kind of the rebel version of Inferno Squadron from the Battlefront 2 games, which is really cool. Which for the Imperials, which was Idem Versio Squad. So it's just, it's cool. And we see shots of her in the Mando's cockpit. And I just had a big smile on my face, Mike, this whole episode, because this team, these characters were so enjoyable in their own episodes, and now they're all in a team. They're all in the Razor's Crest, and they're all going to do this greater mission for the child, basically. And, man, it's just the show is hitting the notes. It's doing all the right things. awesome. And, you know, we haven't even got to the part where we're back to the guild yet or back to the Bounty Hunter planet yet, but we're on our way.
Well, so they get to Navarro, and we all know that Carl Weathers is just planning a double cross. Like, they don't explicitly say it, but you're like, okay, you're walking into a trap, Mando.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, he's got his muscle there. He doesn't expect the Mando to have his own muscle riding half Dubax.
Hey, one of his muscles is another Trandoshan. So there you go. He had a crazy helmet on. You couldn't see his face, which was
funny. Oh, was it? Oh, you're okay. Yeah, that's what the feet were attached to.
The feet and the same pilot suit that Bosk and all the Trandoshans wear.
Yep,
60s pilot suit.
The capris look.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we'll walk partway back to town, and when night falls, we'll camp, and then go early in the morning. And they're having this nice campfire moment where they're roasting something over the fire.
Yeah. And probably then, that animal we just saw in the previous shot. That's all I was thinking.
Yeah. That did not expect dragon attack.
Yeah. Dragon Minox. Crazy. So, yeah, we have this really cool action scene because we have very little light just from the campfire, and which quickly goes out. And we just have basically red light from blaster fire and the
blaster fire and like the embers. Yeah.
So we have a cool scene. A lot of people get injured. We lose the Trandoshan. He gets taken away. We lose a couple blurgs. They die. Yeah. Get taken away. Carl Weathers gets hurt. Mando almost dies, and Kara saves him with her rebel minigun.
The minigun. Yeah, and he gets one off of him with his flamethrower. Yeah.
And I say minigun because I actually don't know the name of this, Mike. This is a Star Wars trivia thing that eludes me.
Her gun is awesome.
It's not a Rebel. It's not a clone trooper or Rebel Z6, the typical minigun we've seen in the video games and some of the other things. It's a different type of minigun.
It looks like, I think it's in Battlefront 2, there's one that basically looks like kind of a double drum fed like machine gun from like Call of Duty or something. And I think there's one that looks kind of like that in Battlefront 2, but it's been long enough since I played it, I don't remember the name.
It's not the Z6, because the Z6 is like the big minigun in Battlefront 2 and the clones, rebels, and all of them.
I don't think it's that one, but again, it's been long enough that
it's cool. Anyway, it's pretty fast shooter.
Her gun was awesome. And then so Carl Weathers gets his arm ripped to shreds, and apparently they're poisonous. Oh, geez, that sucks. Been nice knowing you, Carl.
Yeah, he was like, I didn't think it'd end like this. He's like, but that's where we're at.
He was like, I see that line of cheesy. I'm going to run right up to it and balance there a little bit. I'm Carl Weathers, so people will accept it. And I did.
I was in movies in the 80s. I was in Predator.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, let's not forget that Carl Weathers was shot by the Predator in the 80s, and his arm kept shooting as it was on the ground at the Predator, his disassembled arm. So this is a great moment in this episode, Mike, because we have once again the Yoda baby doing the same thing we saw in episode 2, where he's trying to reach out. We see somebody hurt, but this time Mando doesn't pick him up and put him back in his newly modified.
That's true. It's extra comfortable bed. Yeah, Cara Dune like uses her med pack, and she's like, who else can give me theirs? You're the worst prepared RPG party on the planet.
No one has anything. But then we have
healer.
We have the Yoda baby come up and actually heal it. And this is huge. Not just for the story, but I think for Star Wars at whole, Mike, because anybody who hasn't necessarily watched Clone Wars or read any side stories of extended canon or even Legends, of course, they might not know about the Jedi healing stuff and the greater cinematic narrative, if that makes sense. And I feel like a lot of people are watching this and they're probably intrigued by that because they're saying, wait, what just happened? You know, people with the Force can occasionally heal people sometimes if they're high enough Force power or midi-chlorian count. Yeah, it's a good question for those type of people. So I like
this was very good, but we did skip over the first time that the Force was used in this episode on the ship when Mando was just friendly arm wrestling.
Goodness Cara gracious. Dune. Yeah.
And well, we saw some dark side jump out of that baby real quick. I was like, oh, he's just going to use the Force to like smash her hand. Oh my God. He's choking her.
Yeah, he's like, you are hurting my dad. That's what he thought. He thought you were hurting my dad. So I will make you stop. So that was pretty intense, but yeah, so he uses the Force twice. He gets a little tired again, but not as tired as he did.
He didn't like straight pass out like the time before.
With the mudhorn. Heals Carl Weathers entirely.
But that's enough to convince Carl, you know what? I need to double cross my double cross.
Yeah.
And kill these remaining henchmen and come up with a new plan to go meet the 501st at the gates of this town.
That's right. And so we immediately go into the town. We see scout troopers and stormtroopers everywhere. This is like,
I thought you said four.
Yeah, I thought you said four. We got speeder bikes with scout troopers. We got guarding the perimeter. Then we got stormtroopers everywhere. This is looking pretty rough, Mike. So then we finally get back to the cantina, which has now been cleared out of bounty hunters. And it's mainly run by Imperials at this point. And we're finally back to Werner Herzog. His third episode, he made it three episodes.
And this looks like a completely different day of shooting than the first two.
So he came back. So, and we have some...
The doctor wasn't back.
No, he wasn't. Good point.
He wasn't killed, was he?
We don't know what happened to him. He wasn't killed.
Okay, yeah.
Mando spared his life and left him. So then we have some great dialogue between Greef Karga and, of course, the client, who is Werner's character, with some great vocabulary, all for Werner.
Can I interest you in a libation to mark the culmination of our shared narrative or something?
Accomplishment of our narrative or whatever. Yeah. So that's probably all his own stuff from his mind. That's all Matt. That's all
His script actually read, "Can I get you a drink?
Get you a complicated libation." Man.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then we got a lot of the lines, some of the lines from the trailers about is the world truly a greater place since the Empire fell from power? You know what I mean? We got some of those lines from the trailer, which was a big thing.
And more insinuation that the Empire decimated Mandalore.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. So a lot of that was alluded to in canon and Clone Wars. Let me say that again. So yeah, just a lot of that's alluding to the Siege of Mandalore and past that, where the Empire actually takes over Mandalore. And Herzog even mentions, like, too bad we couldn't come to a mutual, you know, benefit sort of thing with the situation. But we're getting more of that Mandalorian history, which is great. It fuels the Mandalorian story in the story, but also more of the canon of the Mandalorian stuff that we don't really know all the details of. So that was kind of nice.
Excuse me, I have to take a phone call.
Yeah.
That's terrible, terrible impression. But it was like, I want to see the baby. Nope, got to take the phone call.
Yeah, he's like, very important. So.
And then he's finally here. Been waiting seven episodes for Giancarlo Esposito, Moff Gideon, to show
up. That's right.
He sounds just like Gus Fring, and I don't care.
It's fine. he's good acting. Like, so, see, nonetheless.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Are you sure? And right after that happens, we have Werner Herzog and all of his stormtroopers gunned down by...
For a split second, I thought the Mando shot Werner in the back, but no.
Very fast-firing guns.
It was like six or eight death troopers just lighting the place up.
That's right, with their suppressive fire, fast-firing guns.
Suppressing fire! Yeah, they have those
very quick-shooting rifles. And holy cow, the episode takes a turn this moment on. At this point, Mike, we have the climax of the episode where Mando calls Quill and says, "Quill, you need to leave immediately. We're pinned down. You need to get the baby in the ship and take off and leave," is what he says.
Yeah, he'd already sent Quill and the baby back to, like, lockdown.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Nope, it's gone worse. Get out of here."
Yeah. He's like, "We're pinned down. This might be it for me, man, but get that kid out of here. I trust you," you know? And then, of course, at this moment, we have scout troopers, which is part of their role in the Empire, Mike. So it's pretty cool to see this as a Star Wars nerd intercepting the transmission like they do, and something stormtroopers don't do, but scout troopers do. And they pick up on the signal and they go start tracking down Quill. And we know this is starting to get serious at this point.
Did you know that speeder bikes are a hell of a lot faster than a blurg?
I did.
Because they catch up to him real quick.
See, my thought on this was, after this episode, didn't any of Mike's thoughts change on the blurg? Because I feel like now we're emotionally invested in the blurgs. They're in the Razor's Crest. We're taking care of them. Kara, Mando, and Quill all use a blurg to go out to the campsite.
A Dubak probably would have beat the speeder bikes back because it has four legs instead of two.
Still wouldn't have beat him back, probably. Oh, man. But so we have this back and forth going between Moff Gideon, which, by the way, new TIE fighter landing style out of nowhere. That was unexpected. That was interesting. Yeah. That seemed like a new Hasbro toy. That's what I saw.
I actually saw something on Twitter. I think that's an old Doug Chang design.
That makes perfect sense.
That was maybe from the Force Awakens art book that didn't get used.
Okay, fair enough. So we have Moff's TIE fighter. It's a modified version of the standard TIE fighter, which is pretty cool. And of course, now he has this entire legion of stormtroopers, scout troopers, and of course, an entire contingency of death troopers, which are the Empire's most elite.
This was the part where they obviously had members of the California 501st come out, which was super cool that Dave and John talked about at Celebration.
That's right.
Like, we need more stormtroopers. Where can we get them? Well, these fans have better props and costumes than the stuff we make, so let's get them out here.
Yeah, that was a really cool side note that a lot of those were fans playing in that scene. And what a pivotal scene for them to play, Mike. They get to play the end of episode 7 of season 1 of the show. That's pretty exciting for them, too. And they had to sign some serious NDAs. That is right.
For real.
That is right. So, we have Moff Gideon talking about, I'm not even sure if you're certain of what you have and how important it is, but it's mine.
But it means a lot to me. Right. It's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is where it gets serious.
Well, yeah. So I was like, okay, Quill can see the Razor's Crest. He's going to call IG-11 and IG-11 is going to come out and murder Bot.
That's what you'd hope.
But that did not happen.
No, it didn't.
Oh my God.
He didn't. He put the scarf on and the goggles and he was just going that blurg as fast as he could. I even noticed, Mike, the blurg was like starting to get winded at the end, getting close to the ramp. And yeah, you're right. Speeder bikes are really fast and they got him. They just shot the blurg and they shot Quill and Yoda baby.
Made him drop the baby and they scooped him up real quick. And oh my gosh, it was so sad.
And then the episode ends. So we got Mando, Kara, and Grief Karga pinned down. Grief Karga now had a change of heart. We have Quill who dies and Baby Yoda has been captured and no sign of IG-11 at this point, even though remember Quill made a point to say he's not a hunter anymore, but he's still a strong protector. Yeah. So if IG-11 sees Quill's dead body, what's IG-11 going to do?
Well, and another thing we've seen no sign of is the rest of the Mandalorians.
Absolutely.
Did they make it clear what the rest of them did after episode 3?
No, they didn't, right? No, they just escorted Mando off the planet, and that was it.
Are they still there underground? Will they show up and save them? I mean, we kind of have to be building to that, right? How else are they going to get off? I guess it doesn't have to be them. That just seems logical to me if they're still there. Have a Mando and Stormtrooper shootout? That sounds
with
fun.
With Death Troopers?
Yeah,
like some of the most elite Empire units versus elite Mandalorians. That sounds pretty cool. On top of that, maybe IG-11 joins the fight and maybe dies heroically, but takes out some Death Troopers. That's something I didn't know I ever needed and wanted, but I do want it. So we will see. The stakes are high, Mike. And of course, this is how they have to end episode 7. And not only episode 7, but the episode that comes out, you know, the day right before Rise of Skywalker comes out. And, you know, we're going to have the last episode of Mandalorian after Rise of Skywalker. So they knew what they're doing when they timed all this. They really did.
So we have a week and a half to wait for episode 8. We know that Moff Gideon is going to get into his TIE fighter because that's stuff that we've seen in just trailers before. I feel like episode 8 has to be like at least an hour long to fit in the resolution that we're hoping for, right?
Right. And that's something we wanted the whole show, right? Is these hour long episodes. Though episodes 6 and 7 were a little bit longer, which is nice. They weren't the 30 minute.
They were the 40. They were in something. That 40, 42 minute range.
But we need at least a 50 minute episode. I'm certain of that.
Season finale, give me an hour, man.
Yeah.
Come on, John.
Give me 50 to an hour.
Oh, no. Taika's directing the finale. Oh, dip. just remembered that. Oh, man. Give me a 6 hour finale directed by Taika.
Please. Oh, man. So that is episode 6 and 7, guys. We hope you guys enjoyed our thoughts on that. If you have any thoughts, let us know. We literally just finished watching episode 7. So, like, we are right off the foot of that. So if we missed anything that was important to you, let us know. Are you excited for episode 8? Are you excited for Rise of Skywalker? There's a lot.
I'm back. I'm all on the Mando train again. 4, 5, and 6 kind of turned me off, but 7's like, oh, yep, nope, this is cool.
4 was pretty excellent. It was a nice change of pace.
On revisiting 4, I did like it more.
Yeah, Battle for Endor, yeah. Sort of samurai training a village trope we've seen sort of things. It was good stuff. And Cara Dune is turning out to be just awesome by the minute, like we thought she would be. But yeah, so go to thecanoncantina.com for links to all of our social media, and you can listen to our show there as well. We, of course, are on Anchor now, but we're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. We are on social media everywhere, so please follow us right now. This is the pivotal time of the end of The Mandalorian and the end of the Skywalker Saga. So we're on Facebook.com/TheCanonCantina. We're at The Canon Cantina on Twitter, and we are at The Canon Cantina on Instagram. This is a big time, Mike. And of course, you guys can help spread the word of our show by subscribing, rating, reviewing. And if you think we do something better or you have an idea for a future show, email us at canoncantina@gmail.com.
I appreciate you doing all that because I'm still freaking out too much about seeing Rise of Skywalker in like 18 hours to actually like read that paragraph in our notes. So thanks for taking care of that. It's happening. It's happening.
It is happening. I can barely think, Mike. So I'm just keeping myself busy with our show and my other show, Fury's Finest, until Rise of Skywalker. That's literally my plan for the rest of this day, Thursday, just to get through all this. And once again, guys, if you live in Tulsa or Oklahoma City or somewhere in Oklahoma, come to our live show.
Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas.
Arkansas. Kansas. Texas.
I like where your head's at, Mike. I'm being a little more realistic for these people because they might be saying Rise of Skywalker. But if you live close, Saturday, December 21st at 7 p.m., we will be performing the Canon Cantina live at McNally's South City in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Please join us. Come to our show. We're going to have games, and we're going to have a Rise of Skywalker preparation / Skywalker Saga retrospective. And on top of that,
spoiler free. You don't have to have seen movie.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned that again, Mike. And on top of that, we're going to have discussion after the podcast where we all just hang out, have some pints, and talk about Star Wars, which is what it's all about. And we hope you guys can attend that. So please keep an eye out for that. But if you can't attend that, we're going to do our very best to get a live recording of this and get it to you guys on this podcast feed. So be looking out for that.
Yeah, so that's Mando 6 and 7. By the time you're listening to this, you've probably already seen our Rise of Skywalker final thoughts. I think that's everything up until the big day.
Yeah, we're caught up on Mando, Mike. We gave our last thoughts. We're hours away from Rise of Skywalker. This is a little daunting. We did it all, though. We did it all, and hopefully we survive the next, 24 hours. Like, hopefully we survive.
God, work tomorrow's gonna suck.
This is bad stuff. I can't wait, though. This is exciting. This is the best time to be a Star Wars fan, Mike. I'm gonna keep saying it over and over again, and we are there. We are very lucky. So we thank you guys sticking with us and just listening to our thoughts on all this stuff. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, so that will do it for the Canon Cantina. This is the end of our pre-Rise of Skywalker era. Next time you hear from us, the world will be a different place.
Everything will be changed for better or for worse, without a doubt. We're going to be waking up in cold sweats after watching this movie. So
this will be the final word of the Canon Cantina.
May the Force be with you.
Cheers, everybody.
Boring conversation anyway.